As someone in this book observes, the country that I moved to in the winter of 1983 was not the real Norway. It was a 19th century dream of Norway, the creation of a remarkable handful of artistic geniuses, Knut Hamsun, Henrik Ibsen, Edvard Munch, Edvard Grieg, all of whom in varying degrees I admired. It was these giants of European and world culture who first drew my attention to this tiny community in the far north of the world. That was over 30 years now. In a digitally driven globalization means the best-kept secret in Europe is a secret no more. A brilliant but obscuring cultural layer has gradually been overlaid by the slow-motion tsunami of change. Things have changed, and before they change out of all recognition, I have felt an increasing desire to look back and see if we can in some way trace the outlines of a more permanent manifestation of Scandinavian identity, or spirit, or soul, or heart, whichever of those unsatisfactory terms seems most appropriate, and allow myself to ponder freely questions that I have been too busy living to ponder before, such as, is social democracy really Lutheranism disguised as rationalism? Why are Scandinavian prisons so luxurious? Why are their prison sentences so short? Are these examples of weakness, naivete, or are they the best way forward? Why have the Swedes been neutral for the past two centuries? Is it principles, timidity, or the future of mankind? Why are the social services in Scandinavia so generous? Is it wealth, decency, guilt, or a combination of all three? And what, in a historical sense, has been the inner dynamic of the relationship between Danes, Norwegians, and Swedes over the centuries? Greater minds than mine have addressed such matters. The 19th century Norwegian playwright Henrik Ibsen once attempted to define the difference in status between the three peoples. Quote, between us, Swedes, Danes, and Norwegians, we possess all the qualities needed to form a spiritually united, single people. The Swedes are a spiritual aristocracy, Denmark, our spiritual bourgeoisie, and Norway, our spiritual lower class. How valid was Ibsen's analysis? How valid is it today? Who are the Scandinavians? The lands of Scandinavia, contemporary Norway, Denmark, Sweden, with a bit of Iceland thrown in here, gave us the Vikings, for good or for ill. They populated garrison killers, mythological every town, lake woebegone. Their Christian, often state-sponsored religion, has spread throughout the nation and around the world as a northerly form of Lutheranism. Their foreign policy has long allowed both Western alliances and strict neutrality to exist among these neighboring nations. And as the book's blurb advocating we all read the book states, quote, Scandinavia is the epitome of cool. We fill our homes with Nordic furniture. We envy their humane social welfare system and their healthy outdoor lifestyle. We glut ourselves on their crime fiction. Even their strangely attractive melancholia seems to express a stoic, commonsensical acceptance of life's vicissitudes, end quote. High praise for these people of the far north. And so it is that we enter Scandinavians in search of the soul of the north. But maybe like me, you have a weird, strange relationship with the cultural sense of Scandinavia, those nations of Norway, Denmark, Sweden, kind of Iceland. Case in point, one of my favorite books of the past decade to recommend to readers is The 100-Year-Old Man Who Stepped Out of a Window and Disappeared, a contemporary novel written by Scandinavian writer Jonas Jonasson. It's a delightful screwball romp with an underlying pathos about life today. Yet at the same time, I find myself confused by one of the major characters in today's book, Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard. He is quoted admiringly in this book, and downright disturbed by so many of the Scandinavian bestseller mysteries that pop up in the New York Times bestseller lists over the years. Stieg Larsson's A Girl with the series comes to mind. So I, like many of us, for numbers of reasons, have a really mixed relationship with things Scandinavian. Yet I'll say, too, that this, The Scandinavians, is slowly becoming one of my favorite books of the year. Quote, this book is not so much a travel as a journey, end quote, wrote another reviewer, and how true that is. Reading the first several chapters alone takes us on a wild and at times trippy, the author's own term, ride. as we journey into the lands we call Scandinavia, from his first jaunt abroad with a friend at age 18, when the two set off on a quixotic journey from their British homeland that our author remembers as embarking on without sleeping bags, without money, without any real plan, with the expected result of seeing Copenhagen streets. Streets that would give 1960s San Francisco a run for hippie-friendly environs, if our author's an authority about his experience. Close up and personal in that cold 1969 winter. Yet the serendipitous adventure his friend had wanted to travel to the sunny shores of Spain. This whim of a young man's flight of fancy became the first of many journeys, which led our author into a lifelong interest, perhaps even obsession, with the lands to the north. The Scandinavians has hints of my recently reviewed travel book, Mark Kurlansky's Havana, A Subtropical Delirium, with its intimate moments of experience beautifully expressed and mixed with a true-to-life, youth-inspired wonder at the cultures that our author discovers. It leads us on and on as our author continues to wonder at and move to discoveries about these northern lands well into a more sedate middle age. In other words, this is such a quirky, temperamental, fascinatingly odd book about Scandinavia that it could well have been written by a native Scandinavian. And perhaps the author truly is, as his wife quips early in the book, a Scandinavian from a previous life. We go on in the chapters that follow to experience, to learn, to wonder at this trio of nations that the author tells us in his intro were considered European backwaters at best, as late as the 19th century, but have slowly, surely become the cultural, educational, and even economic touchstones for so many folks in the 21st century. Yes, the narrative in the Scandinavians is often wandering, almost, but not quite stream of consciousness, an exposition of what our author learns and questions about the people and cultures of Scandinavian. As another reviewer has written, Robert Ferguson's Scandinavians is not a book for the beach, but it might well fit the bill on a distant northern shore, with the fog rolling in and memories of long ships stirring. Beautifully written, it presents a historical narrative punctuated by reminiscences, conversations retold, snatches of autobiography, fragments of biography and stories. End quote. Take one of the middle chapters, for example, where we spend a considerable number of pages hashing over the author's insights about 18th century Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard, whom we mentioned earlier, whose thought has been opaque to so many of us, me included. These chapters become an enlightening discussion that weave their way in and out of one cold November night, which our author spent with a friend taking in a jazz show in downtown Oslo, Norway. Through these chapters, we move from Kierkegaard's struggles with his nation's state-sponsored Christianity into the author's musing questioning, revolving around what many outside of Scandinavia see as the quote-unquote humane response in Scandinavia to capital crimes. The chapter is stunningly readable, the philosopher's arguments clearly stated and explained, and those questions surrounding capital punishment intriguingly presented. The end result is a surprisingly rich meander through Scandinavian thought, Scandinavian culture, from the 1800s into the present day. And that's just one example of many in this fascinating look at those nations of the North. By focusing on anecdotes, our author manages to weave in here thoughts and ideas and cultural icons that express themselves across the three nations and into our world as well. Note, there are lots of Britishisms in here. The editor says nothing about this being a book written with a British audience in mind. So if you're put off by British turns of phrase, don't bother. If you're more accepting of what our folks across the pond may write in their own special way, have a go. I think you'll really enjoy what Ferguson has to tell us. In sum, Scandinavians is neither the first nor the last word about a part of the European world so many of us in the States and in Great Britain find a fascinating melange of cultures and history. So while it may not be the first or the last word on what it means to be Scandinavian, it truly is an engrossing and delightful way to experience a cultural world distant, yet seemingly very close to our own. To let our author have the last word, we'll conclude with this from the book. The admiration for these Nordic countries continues into the 21st century. Perhaps oddly, none of those travelers I've mentioned made particular mention of the melancholy that has always accompanied, shadow-like, the other image the outside world now has of Sweden, Norway, and Denmark as clean, well-lit places. Yet, especially in literature and film, this trope is never far from the minds of observers of the region and its people. In time, the enormous success of such bright and shadowless entities as IKEA and ABBA, and the explosion of interest in Scandinavians as writers of crime fiction and television drama may put an end to this characterization of melancholy. But for now, it persists, and it is one of the myths I want to look at more closely as I embark upon what isn't, strictly speaking, a history so much as a journey, a discursive and aggressive stroll through the last 1,000 years of Scandinavian culture in search of the soul of the North. It's quite a book. Scandinavians in Search of the Soul of the North by Robert Ferguson. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.